Good morning, Bruce, and welcome to the House of the Rising Sun, everyone, with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And talking about the fact that I tried to log into to Skype, and I had forgotten my password. And I thought, wow, is that ever a great symbol for what we're doing right now? We're trying to log in, and by God, I can't remember that password.
Well, you know, there's an app that I use called 1Password, which is sort of symbolic, and it remembers it all that for you. You just have to remember 1Password. It's like, how symbolic is it? You just have to remember oneness.
That's hilarious. It's like the clapper. You got the clapper for your...
The one hand clapping, you mean?
No, the clapper. Like, you plug it into the wall, and you plug your stuff into it, and then when you clap your hands...
Clap on. That works.
I mean, really, that's the universal password to turn on your stuff.
Yeah.
And now you can do it with a remote control from your phone.
Yeah.
You can control your whole house with a remote control from your phone. So we're trying to figure out ways to connect. And, man, you know, if we ever put our minds to actually connecting, what a world this would be.
And the irony is the insanity of even imagining a world that could be disconnected.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's so disconcerting, actually. You know, and this is the reason, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're, disoriented, or you know, what happens to me a lot, and this is probably happens to you, I'm sure it happens to everybody. I have a thought in my mind about how I look, right? When I look in the mirror, that is not reflected. And you know what? That really upsets me. It's like, wow, how come I'm not that tall, thin, blonde person I thought I was? Instead, I'm a short, dumpy brunette. But, you know, what happened?
Or anything less than perfect spirit is an insult to our intelligence, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Really. I mean, because
anything
that isn't everything is always going to come up short.
Is nothing.
Anything
that isn't everything is nothing.
Yes, beautifully said. Thank you. And there's the beauty we're looking for, is the simplicity of perfect oneness that we never left.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And we get so obsessed with all the personal dream that we made up, huh?
We're so caught up in it that, you know, we'll kill or die because of it.
Well, people. we all do every day.
I know.
Mean, that's the craziness of it. I mean, we don't think of ourselves as murderers, but, you know, like one of the things that Ken Wapnick points out is not to dwell on this or anything, but he says, you know, every breath, you know, thousands of microorganisms are meeting their demise with each inhalation and exhalation, you know?
Yeah.
But do we care? No.
No.
Should we care? Well, no, not really. But the idea is that we, you know, we're all in a murderous thought system where we believed we could kill perfect oneness. And that's the crazy thing. That's the insanity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and here's something that probably may sound really, really, really out there, but you know me. I'm going there. You actually do recognize that things are dying because of you living.
We
actually do know that from a deep, 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 I mean, it's just a part of the construction of the body, that it knows that in order to survive, it must kill. This is a dog-eat-dog world, as they say. Savage dreams, yes, it's a slaughterhouse. So guess what? Even though that is not up in the consciousness of me, because I'm just living in a light and lovely world where flowers are beautiful and children are sweet and sunsets are lovely and rainbows are fun. You know, I'm living in that world. until I stub my toe, or the dog poops on the floor, or, you know, any one of a number of things that just will throw me immediately into hell, instantly into hell, because that peace is nothing. It's just doesn't exist.
So you mean the desolate, tyrannical world of the ego is revealed if we happen to look?
Just open your eyes a little bit. Just open up your little eyes, and you will see that you're a murderer. Yes.
but not to worry. That's only the self that we think we are, the little s self.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty, the real beauty of this. Yeah. Again, it's that, that, you know, nothing horrific has happened.
Right.
But in a crazy dream, and somehow that, you know, the murderer thing reminded me of it's not probably on my top favorites, but it is funny, is the architect sketch in Monty Python, where it also revolves around secret Masonic handshakes the one where John Cleese plays this architect and he's showing he's describing this architectural concept to some clients, and he says, so I'm going to paraphrase this, of course, but he says, so in this concept, imagine the tenants are on a moving conveyor past beautifully ornate murals depicting scenes of great beauty or whatever, and then gently escorted to the room with the counter rotating knives, where there's troughs for the blood, and then at this point the client stops him and says, "What?" He says, I wasn't supposed to be designing a slaughterhouse, you know.
But that's perfect.
But that's basically, you know, the ego's plan is so insane, and we don't even think of it that way. We forget that. You know, this isn't a Hollywood happy ending script that the ego has written, and we keep trying to sugarcoat it and sanitize it and spray air freshener on it, but it's stinky.
It still stinks, yes, no matter what you do, no matter you do.
It's unpleasant. Yeah.
It's not nice. No amount of Febreze would take that away.
It's bloody unpleasant, you know.
Bloody is right.
Anyway, go ahead. We should probably get to some reading or something.
That's all right.
I'm digressing.
We have plenty of time now.
We've
moved, and we're in ACIM Gather again, so we're no longer in Awakening Together. We do have plenty of time, and we can do what we like. What I was going to say, though, is what we don't get, what really is not seen in any way at all because of this incredible way that the ego has of veiling things from us, which is basically we invent something and then we pretend we didn't. That incredible way of veiling it, because we are murdering at every instant, in every move. In fact, even inside of our body, there's wars going on between, you know, white blood cells and bacteria against themselves. And they're, you know, fighting against themselves. And sometimes cancer comes up and becomes, oh, I'm going to destroy everything around me. And all this is going on. And it's murder, murder, murder. And yet we do not recognize one shred of guilt. And the fact is that in order for all of this hideous stuff to be going on, somebody's got to be the guilty one. Somebody's got to be the one who made this or is allowing this or is for me, it's like I'm helplessly doing it. I'm helplessly killing people. It's like, you know, drone bombing or something or, you know, right now, even though I'm not personally doing it, my tax money, my votes, whatever, is causing people to be bombed and murdered all over the world, mm-hmm. even in America, wherever we live. You know, this is all because of me and my decision. And because of me and my decision, I'm surrounded by just a slaughterhouse. And yet I do not recognize a single shred of the guilt that is boiling underneath because of all this.
I did for a moment yesterday when I mailed off a sizable check for my quarterly estimated taxes to the IRS. And I think about that. It's like, well, how much of that, you know, X number of dollars is going for, you know, like you say, drone strikes and military intervention around the world. And yet, you know, no country is exempt from that. It's all about separate interests. I mean, if we all look at the root cause, it's the idea that the unconscious guilt in the mind, I mean, which is at the last place we go, right, is real. It's that we somehow shattered perfect oneness, but it takes the form of, there is something outside of me that I need to be upset about because, I believe on some level that differences are important, and I made up this entire world, this outer shield of oblivion, as the Course refers to it in Lesson 136, a few paragraphs down, that in order to escape from that unconscious guilt, which is the inner shield, which it also, you know, conceals nothing in truth, but that's not our perspective here. We think this is this horrible world where I, you know, a friend of mine on Facebook yesterday sent me who's a fellow Course student, and she sent this link about puppy mills and the craziness of that is why we make, we're on quite a diatribe this morning, aren't we?
Oh, no, you know what, this is good, yeah.
It was interesting because, you know, it kind of tugged at the heartstrings and, you know, this, the person who posted this was showing how that people are rescuing people from the puppy mills and the craziness of that, of breeding animals just because people need, quote unquote, pets to comfort them, you know, and what do we need the comfort for? I mean, why do we, well, really, that's kind of the bigger question is why do we need anything in this world?
Why? Yeah.
And why, you know, why do we do anything? And then there's really only two purposes. And I think that's where one of Ken Wapnick's brilliant commentaries on A Course in Miracles that he's made in several places is that, the Eastern mystical tradition has given us the idea that the world is an illusion, and that's brilliant, and that's crucial, and that's very important. And another missing piece to that, and perhaps, you know, a major complement to that idea is that illusion is purposive. We made up the world of Maya and of the matrix-like dream state and forgetfulness and the resistance that is massive. That we all have, so that, you know, like when I dropped that letter in the envelope, I thought about, you know, the unconscious guilt for a split second, then went back on my walk to do another errand, you know, to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, because all of my money, Bill, Bruce, whenever I pay my taxes, uh-huh. It goes for universal health care. It goes for taking care of babies. None of my money goes to drone strikes. That's all the Republicans' money. Oh, wait a minute. They don't pay taxes. So I guess.
But
not then, even Donald Trump.
But then we realize, okay, you know, we can demonize the demonizers and then we have this phrase that's intrinsically divisive as are our politics, that of both sides of the aisle. Well, what aisle is there in perfect oneness? Well, none, but we've made up a world in which there's all these divisions and polarizations and entrenched lines of thinking and families and just like this, it's a civil war. Just like families were torn apart in the civil war, so our kin, which is really everyone, is our kinfolk. Which I think has the same root word as kind or
yes,
or,
kindred.
Yeah. That we forget that when we partake of ego's insane thinking, which is its outer shield of oblivion, making up a whole world to hide from the inner shield of oblivion, the inner world of guilt that is equally silly and unfounded.
Exactly.
No more harmful than a Monty Python skit about, an architectural flat flats that turns out to be a slaughterhouse. You know,
that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah. So, and yeah, it's we don't recognize. In fact, we're so oblivious. And you know, I love the shields of oblivion. The word oblivious is just so perfect for us. And you know, what you reminded me just now when you said about the Civil War. Did you know, this is an interesting fact,
yeah,
more Americans were killed in the Civil War than in any other war?
Yes.
Did you know that?
I did know that, yeah.
And do you know why that was?
Well, it engaged a huge portion of the country.
Because it was all Americans. It wasn't anybody else. It was Americans fighting Americans.
Right.
That's the only people who died in that war. Maybe a few foreigners or maybe a few Native Americans who, you know, who aren't technically Americans according to
how can that be?
I know, it's just amazing. And so that's what we do with this course. Jesus is really giving us asking us to look at all of these things, all of these thoughts, all of these beliefs, all these things that we think are so true and so real and so coherent. Okay, we look at this and we think it's so coherent. And I love that word because it means like understandable, but it also means like clear. You use it with light, you use the word coherent with so many things because it comes together and it stays together. But this, you know, nothing in this world is real and yet it appears coherent to us. It appears to us not to be incongruous at all. That I pay taxes to kill babies at the same time I'm paying taxes to save babies. That doesn't mean anything to us at all because we're so, these shields of oblivion have completely bamboozled us. So I'm getting out of the bamboozling business here and, I'm going to listen to Jesus and see if he can help us out here.
Yes, let's do that.
So,
how about FAQ number 1210? That looks like a substantive one.
Okay.
It's actually a few ahead of where I've been reading, but I just jumped to something that wasn't just a short paragraph. This one's got a half dozen or so. And this seems like it has a good lead-in.
I like this one.
The little intro question is, why does it seem as if the Holy Spirit really does intervene in the world? And that's, of course, the ego's hope is that if we can, we as ego invested selves can convince ourselves that the Holy Spirit is involved in the world and is concerned with behavior and form and anything having space, time, individuality or reflection of ego's thought system of sin, guilt, fear, and death. And then, it's like this, insidious Machiavellian plan has been a fait accompli in that system, because then that means that, God is cruel if God made up the world and the Holy Spirit is invested or involved in any way in the outcome of this crazy dream.
Yeah, God is insane. Seriously. So yeah,
not to mention schizophrenic.
Not to mention, and isn't that just? I mean, no wonder we're so afraid.
Oh yeah,
seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to make something out there to help us. And so I'm sure if I was afraid I was going to be late for my dentist appointment, and the Holy Spirit provided me a parking place, I would be very grateful, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, and which isn't to say that we can't afford to be grateful for specifics, but I think that's a good reminder that when we catch ourselves, and I think this happens more and more over time, being grateful for whether it's an inheritance or a parking place or things going the way we want them in whatever form, it's like if we can have just a little mindful moment of saying, oh, I'm making a big deal out of a specific happening or not happening the way that might benefit the character that I have identified with in this dream that I call Bruce or Lynn or whoever. And that's crazy. That's crazy, isn't it? I mean, because in truth, if we're all one thing, especially if it's something that's at the advantage, at the expense of is probably the better start that again. If it's at the expense of someone else or, you know, anyone or else, then we're missing the point. If we leave anyone out of that perfect oneness, then, you know, we're obviously, we've got some work left to do in our mind. So shall we read the FAQ? Do you want to read the question? Are you still there? Have to attend to something.
Muted my mic so I could cough some.
Good.
Talking away here. So.
Okay.
Some years ago, I went through something that in which it seemed to me that lessons in faith were played out before me, many of them centered on my sons and their drug addictions. This is coming for me. I have so many friends who have kids who are drug addicts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, I have a son-in-law who's an alcoholic, and you know, same thing. So anyway, so many things centered on my sons and their drug addictions. There seemed to be immediate responses in the world. A counselor calling to tell me that my son was doing so well. Dolphins jumping high into the air. When I would let go of or release the whole thing to mystery. One last episode, I was commiserating with a friend. We were at Universal Studios. I was sitting on a planter on a patio with my head down in despair. Instantly, an actor dressed as Groucho Marx sat on my lap and, flicking his cigar, said, "There's no hope for Ben, hey?" I imagine our mouths hung open, probably because her son's name is Ben. That's probably not what he said at all. However, this is what she heard. And she says, "I imagine our mouths hung open. I would interpret this and many other events as the Holy Spirit intervening in the world, or maybe, to be more specific, in salvation. Yet I hear you say that the Holy Spirit does not intervene in the world. Can you qualify this statement to integrate with my experience? Is there a difference between that actor doing what he did and Helen doing what she did for us? Isn't the course itself an intervention into our world?" Boy, this is a very good question. And
Hey,
Lewis is here. Yay. Oh, my goodness. I haven't talked to you forever. So.
Hello, Lewis, okay. And everyone.
All right. So this is such a good question, because even I do this.
Bruce, we all do.
Something goes right that I think is right. I say, "Thank God." You know, "Thank God I did that."
We're dragging God into the dream again. Huh?
Dragging him in. Yeah. Dragging him in. Boop, doo, doo, doo.
But only in our dreams.
Dragging him in. So think about this now as we're listening to this, these answers to this question, because even when you don't recognize it, how many times are we giving credit to the Holy Spirit for things that happen, or blaming God or the Holy Spirit for things that seem to go wrong? And he's right here in our dream. So I'm going to shut up and let you read the answer.
Okay. And I'm going to preface that with, since hello. There's interesting little tones there. I think as we started out this morning, we kind of got on sort of a macabre, morose sort of tone in a sense. But I think that it's a good reminder that the course isn't about love and kindness and peace and joy directly. It's an indirect one, and as Ken Wachman points out so many times, it's a course in not know, because we don't need a course in peace and love and joy, because that's what we are in truth, but that's not who we think we are. That's what we are, but that's not who we think we are. And as long as we're identified with the specific selves that have specific special interests, we need this curriculum. We need, you know, the form can be, you know, countless varieties in order to, you know, lead us out of that quagmire of thinking. But it's a course in not know. It's a course in undoing. And I think that's, this question addresses that, like, although all of them do in different ways, but, how it's not about the behavior. It's always about the change in the mind. And it's always and only about the mind, because that's the only place where this made-up world really exists, which is corroborated by not only ancient mysticism, but modern physics and, of course, miracles. So we're reading from the FACIMOutreach.org FAQ number 1210, and Lynn just read the question, so I'm going to read the first paragraph, the answer, which goes, as you begin to recognize more and more that you are the dreamer of this dream that we call our lives, and not one of the figures in the dream, you will understand that you, as mind, are the one who chooses the symbols that you will experience, just as you do in your sleeping dreams at night. While we believe we are bodies, we think that there is very much that is external to us, including the Holy Spirit and Jesus, and that they are agents who can intervene in our world either at will or at our invitation. But the symbols are our own production. The only meaningful difference among them is whether we allow our minds to be guided by the Holy Spirit or by the ego as we choose, and then, most importantly, interpret the symbols we experience. The ego's interpretation will reinforce our belief in the reality of separation, while the Holy Spirit's will very gently lead us to awakening from the dream of separation. And that's where the peace and love and joy and beauty and kindness exist, is choosing against ego's misinterpretation, which is fearful, which is, you know, terrifying and morbid and horrific, just as some of the things we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation are. But as Ken points out in this audio that I've listened to over probably several hundred times now, because it's on my iPhone and I listen to it while I'm out walking. You know, the idea isn't to make us feel guilty, but it's the idea is to basically awaken us from the guilt and to have us see how miserable, not to have us be more miserable, but to have us see how miserable we already are in having chosen this horrific dream and choosing against identifying with it. We're not going to necessarily change the dream, but we can change against identifying with it. And we do that process of disidentification with the ego is basically all about looking at shared interests and listening to metaphorically, symbolically, that inner kindness teacher that we never left and that we took with us into the dream to help us reinterpret, or perhaps better said, deinterpret ego's getting it really wrong at every turn. Okay, you want to read the next one?
Sure.
That paragraph?
Going to comment here is that you know, it does say somewhere in the course, and I've read it, and I really shocked me, kind of, not shocked me, but it alerted me to something when I did read it. Is that when this tiny mad idea occurred? And this projection of every evil thing that could ever be if God was not God, basically the projection of a world of non-God, when that occurred, that is the instant that the Holy Spirit became activated, became. And what the Holy Spirit did was go into that script, that dream, and put a miracle behind every single event. So there's a miracle right now. There's a miracle right now, and there's a miracle right now. Every event that there is has a miracle attached to it. It's like two sides of a coin, right?
Yes.
And all you have to do is flip over and you know, basically ask for the miracle. You know, just like, I need a miracle. I need a miracle every day. You know, you got to ask for that miracle. And no matter what it is, if you can only remember to do that, you know, it could be. And this is, you know, I'm not going to try to say that the Holy Spirit is here now doing it, because there is no here now. Everything happened long ago. It's done, over. Even me talking to you right now, done, over.
Ancient.
So it's not like that parking spot just suddenly appeared. It's like that parking spot has been there since the first moment I decided I needed to park. Mm-hmm. From the moment I decided that I needed something other than heaven, that parking spot was there. The car was there. This body, everything. That's what happened. You know, is this dream was invented. And the Holy Spirit just is the truth that's behind it. And it's not even that it's some kind of a, you know, you're thinking some kind of esoteric truth thing that's hanging out there ghostly or whatever. No, what it is it's the thing that if it were in that situation would not be any problem, any issue. Nothing would be wrong. Nothing would be broken. Shalom. Nothing broken, nothing missing. That is what it would be. And so all that when we ask for the miracle is to connect back to the truth of the situation. And in that truth, that situation doesn't exist at all. Mm-hmm. It never happened. And so it brings our mind back into alignment with the truth of what we are. And so this is the power of asking for the miracle, being the miracle worker. Is because now instead of looking at the parking thing as a gift, I look at it as a confirmation. Yes, this never happened. This is the thing, the part of it never was.
Yeah,
I excellent. Never needed a car to park. I didn't need to go to the dentist.
Or a body that needed to have a car to go someplace.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It just restores you to your right mind. And that's the miracle.
Yeah, at every turn, and we have, like you say, we have that opportunity every turn. What came to mind as you were sharing that was another metaphor that I like is the dark thread or the golden thread, and the ego, you know, metaphorically, you know, made this dark thread going into the dream of separation, this labyrinthine maze of differences and you know, choices and crazy dark imaginings, and it never happened to start with, but what seemed to happen was that we seemed to have split off a little s self, separate self, from perfect oneness, which we can't even understand that oneness, but we took with us the memory of everything else, including the capital S self, which, you know, it literally everything. We took a memory of everything, essentially, that's like this golden glowing thread that connects us with everything else in the cosmos, even in the dream world, in a sense. We took that into the dream so that we would automatically, perfectly, mathematically have at every turn a way to get out of the dream. And that's what forgiveness represents in the Course in Miracles, is we forgive the dreamer for having seemed to have chosen the dark thread, and then the instant we just turn it around and grab it pulling the other direction, that dark thread that leads us deeper into separation and fragmentation and despair becomes a golden thread that leads us out. And it doesn't, and we're not finding the hope in the cave. We're not finding the hope in the dream. We're finding the hope of remembering that as long as we trust that inner kindness teacher's voice, metaphorically, that memory we took with us into the dream that we call the Holy Spirit or the Jesus of the Course or whatever label works for you is fine. But it's anything that represents shared interest and kindness and, you know, waking up from differences is perfectly suitable. That then leads us to the mouth of the imaginary cave back into the sunlight where we truly never left. And this was over long ago. So.
Oh, I like that. The golden thread.
yeah. There's one of Ken's audios talks about that, and it talks about the myth of Ariadne and the Minotaur, and it's really quite good. I'll have to.
That is good. I might just go ahead and get that for myself because I like to play a lot of Ken here. So
yeah,
we will be listening to a lot of Ken here.
It's
so.
Excellent. It's an excellent one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then of course Ariadne is the name of the character in the movie Inception, which is, you know, it ties in that metaphor, which is there's several posts I put on ACIM blog, at least a couple of in detail about the symbolism in the movie Inception, which was brought up by Craig Villarubia with a talk with Cindy Laura Renard on the conversations he's been having lately, which was really
cool. What? Craig Villarubia is going to be our mini-series guest. Starting this Sunday. So we're going to have Craig on for the next 4 weeks on Awakening Together. So, but we're in ACI, I'm gathered, but that's Awakening Together.
Yeah.
Very confusing. It's real interesting, though. I was just this morning, I'm reading the Justification for Forgiveness, which was the very first section, I guess, of A Course in Miracles that I took a deep interest in. Because as soon as I figured out it was about forgiveness, I wanted to know what the heck that was. Mm-hmm. And this section is just so clear. Jesus is so clear here about, why it is that we are innocent, really.
Which section is that?
The Justification for Forgiveness in chapter 30.
Chapter 30, okay.
Section 6. Chapter 36 and 6, and he says here, it must be true the miracle can heal all forms of sickness, or it cannot heal. Mm-hmm. Its purpose cannot be to judge which forms are real and which appearances are true. If one appearance must remain apart from healing, one illusion must be part of truth, and you could not escape all guilt, but only some of it. You must forgive God's Son entirely, or you will keep an image of yourself that is not whole and will remain afraid to look within and find escape from every idol there. Salvation rests on faith. There cannot be some forms of guilt that you cannot forgive, and so there cannot be appearances that have replaced the truth about God's Son.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not one thing that is unforgivable, not one thing that is not worthy of heaven. There is not one thing. It's and once we begin to see this, that this process of forgiveness, which is what we're talking about, that process of forgiveness is the process of letting go of our beliefs in this world. And so, you can say, I want to give up the world, but isn't that guy a jerk? Or I want to give up the world, but man, something smells bad here. it doesn't matter. Or I love, but please don't take away my roses. Please don't take away my puppy. Please don't take away my sunsets and my
Kodachrome.
Don't take away my Kodachrome. Don't take my Kodachrome away. Really? So, Jim Dunn asks this quite frequently here and here. Which part of this illusion do you want to believe is true?
Yeah, really.
Obviously.
And if we believe any part of it, we believe all of it. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, and that's what he's saying here. It's either all or nothing. It has to be holy. You have to do it completely, or you're not doing it at all.
Right.
There's, you can't have one thing. You can't hold one thing apart or accept it.
Yeah.
You
just touched on the converse, which is basically if we leave anyone or anything out of our thoughts of perfect innocence and truth, then we've basically shattered the innocence in our mind only that is always available to us. But then we put on the face of innocence, which is basically the facade that ego wears in order to maintain its tyrannical and savage, victimhood paradigm. And that's the crazy part, is that we, in truth, we're all perfectly innocent. But, this dream that was over long ago, we keep rehashing and regurgitating and bringing up again, over and over again in countless ways, and every time we do that, it's because we cherish specialness and differences and exclusion in some fashion or another, and it's just crazy. I'm glad you read that paragraph 7, which I quickly found in the Justification Forgiveness. There's also some lines that I've got underlined in the facing page, which starts with in paragraph 2, pardon is always justified. It has a sure foundation. You do not forgive the unforgivable, nor overlook a real attack that calls for punishment. Well, that's real attack is an oxymoron. There is no real attack. In other words, if anything involving space, time, individuality, etc., is a dream, then perfect oneness can't be attacked. Nothing real can be threatened. So therefore, anything that could possibly seem to be threatened can't be real. And that's what our beloved course is gently but firmly and consistently reminding us of, that we never left that perfect oneness. We never left the heaven in our mind, if you will, contains an unassailable peace. So, exactly. Sure, you want to read the second paragraph?
Sure. I just want to actually, from that paragraph that you were just reading from,
okay.
The last three lines of it, or the last four lines of it, if pardon were unjustified, you would be asked to sacrifice your rights when you return forgiveness for attack.
Mm-hmm.
But you are merely asked to see forgiveness as the natural reaction to distress that rests on error and thus calls for help. Forgiveness is the only sane response. It keeps your rights from being sacrificed.
Bingo. Yeah, I've got that pretty well underlined, too. That's, and in fact, I even put in the margin, our eternal Miranda rights, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It keeps our rights from being sacrificed. That's a huge, huge thing, because isn't that really the reason that I can't let you off the hook on this? Is because if I let you off the hook, I'm sacrificing my own right to whatever.
Victimhood, usually. I mean, that's
yeah.
One form or another. That's usually what it boils down to. It's some kind of martyrdom or self pity, or and not to say that we shouldn't grieve when things appear to happen to us, but if we can kind of watch the thought process and have true compassion for ourselves, then we begin to let go of the whole premise that loss is possible. I just listened to a wonderful, in fact, I'm listening about the third time, a wonderful half-day seminar, the streaming video audio seminars from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles that just aired this last week. And it was the title was Loss Is Not Loss When Properly Perceived. And this ties in perfectly with that. The whole idea of all the things that we think we can lose in the world, and both mental and physical, are just part of ego's insanity, aren't they? And that seminar went into that in great detail. But if anybody's interested, the same folks that make these FAQs in Temecula and are responsible for maintaining the FACIM.org website are still carrying on beautifully Ken Wapnick's work with streaming videos. And you can go to FACIM.org and either attend in person if you happen to be in Southern California or listen to these on your computer. And they're very well done and just brilliant. Highly recommend them. So
can we buy the recordings also of those?
I think they're making the recordings. I don't think they've released them as MP3s or digital files yet, but you can stream them while they're happening live, and they make them available for like a week and a half or so. So if you don't happen to be busy, you know, that particular day or weekend or whatever, or if it's a series of days, they make them available for a significant amount of time afterwards, so you can listen to them.
Oh, great.
At your convenience, yeah.
I would think that would be a wonderful resource
they're just fantastic, yes. They're very
well, good. You know, and I have, obviously, because of what I do, I don't have time to be doing much of anything like that. But if I had access to, like, the streaming, I could do it when I needed to or when I could.
Yes.
That would be great.
Yes.
Or an MP3. So,
yep.
Yeah, so perfect. Let us go back then to look at the rest of our question, or the rest of our answer, because I think what we're touching on are these are the fundamentals. This is the fundamental of A Course in Miracles. If you don't get this, and believe me, I know people who've been studying this course for 40 years who don't get this.
And we all don't get it every time we resist, and that's okay. That's what the forgiveness is for, to recognize that our resistance is part of our forgiveness curriculum. It's basically every time we balk at the idea that perfect oneness has never been damaged, we need to go back to our forgiveness classroom and choose once again, huh?
Well, exactly. And here's kind of the way that I look at this, and just was from reading this from Jesus also, is that if I really, really choose to and want to, then all I have to do is look at any situation that occurs. Parking spot, it's either love or a call for love. Mm-hmm. my check for my taxes going to bomb babies. It's either love or a call for love. What is my response to either of those things? You know, that's really what when the rubber meets the road, that's what it comes down to, is what is it, you know, I can assign meanings. I've been listening to a lot of the Byron Katie work, you know, that when I believe my thoughts, I suffer. When I believe my thoughts, I suffer, mm-hmm. because I assign these meanings to them. And this is just exactly what Jesus talks about. This is exactly what's being said here. When I'm believing these thoughts of the ego, these are not even my own thoughts. It hurts me. It's painful. And why is that? Because that's so unnatural. You know, it makes me believe bad things about myself and bad things about you, and there's all kinds of guilt, and, you know, it's just crazy. It's crazy. And this is why, you know, Jesus says, stop, you know, just stop even trying to think, because all you're doing is dredging up this whole array of ego thoughts. Anytime you're searching for anything, searching for an answer, looking, And why are we looking? The only reason that we're searching for an answer, looking to find something different than what is happening now, is because we are not in acceptance of the fact that this is a dream.
Right.
We're not in, and we're thinking there's something that we have to do to change it or to fix it or to make it better. And that's what the ego kept saying. No, everything is bad. Everything is wrong. You got to do something to keep us engaged. We stay engaged in the ego thought system because we feel like, you know, it's up to us to do something. But what Jesus is saying, you don't have to do anything. Really, honestly, I need do nothing is not just a catchphrase. It is a truth, an absolute truth. I don't need to do anything. And what I find myself, Bruce, as my mind becomes clearer and clearer, anytime I start thinking about what I need to do, it gives me a headache. It makes me sick. I get nervous. My gets tight in my chest. Like, oh, what do I need to do? You know, and I go into a panic. I mean, literally, immediately go into a panic because I don't know what I need to do.
Right.
And I'm making up a thought and a story about what I need to do, and I'm imagining what I need to do instead of going to Source Spirit, who says, it don't matter what you think you're going to do. It don't matter how you plan. It doesn't matter how you worry. What's going to happen is going to happen because this script was written a long time ago, mm-hmm. and you're not going to change it. But yeah. All you got to do – okay, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, as you were saying that, it reminded me of two fellow course students and teachers who I both appreciate very much, Cindy Laura Renard and Corinne Zupko. Have had comments on their videos, including the one that Craig did with Cindy recently, about, you know, their forgiveness classroom having centered largely around anxiety. And I think the anxiety comes from, you know, knowing the other foot's going to drop, whether it's a Monty Python-shaped boot from the sky or you know, the sword of Damocles or the counter-rotating knives in the architect sketch, you know. Something is not going to go quite well as planned, you know, and that's because it can't. The ego's strategy is intrinsically flawed, and it doesn't end well. But that's not what we are, and that's why we need to fire the imposter that we hired to take the place of the self that we never left. I mean, it's just a dark figure with a dark thread leading us into a labyrinth that we never went into.
Yeah, and why don't we fire that imposter? Because we are afraid that if we let that go, that we will no longer have an instrument, a tool. We will be lost. We'll be helpless. We'll be like the Borg. We'll be like, you know, the puppet master has taken us over, and now we no longer have our own will. You know, this is how we feel and think that what is going to happen if we stop listening. This, and why do we think this? Because the ego's telling us that. Oh, don't let me go, because, man, you're going to be really screwed if you do. No, that's not true. You know, and but we don't know that, because our whole experience has been, you know, where do we run when things go wrong, and who's there to save us when things go bad? You know, she may be a mama who drinks and smokes and takes in, you know, crazy men, but she's still your mama. You're still going to go back to her because that's all you know.
Right, right. Yeah. As you were speaking, I thought of yet another metaphor. I'm just full of metaphors. Anyway,
well, what's a metaphor?
I never met one. Yeah. Right. Anyway, I was thinking that, you know, the ego has no cognizance of truth, just as truth has no cognizance of the ego. They're mutually exclusive thought systems. And the ego is kind of like when we hold up our thumb at arm's length and use the thumb properly positioned, or maybe improperly positioned would be a better way of phrasing it, to blot out the sun or the moon. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. It just means for us at that moment, we have no visibility of them. Although yet still all around us, the light that's reflected from them still gets to us, you know, on a moon, full moon night or on a typical day. It doesn't, you know, it's a non-overcast day, but it's still, the light's still there. It's just, we've chosen to ignore it. We've chosen to intentionally try to block it.
Yes.
But it's still, there's so much light still there that no matter how hard we try, we can't escape it. And that's why the things like the Forgotten Song, you know, I think speak to all of us, you know, whether or not people want to admit it or not, but we all know that we're like little lost children who feel really horrible that we think that we've, you know, thrown God under the bus and now have driven on to leave him out in the desert to die and...
Yep.
But nothing happened. That's just a perverse fantasy that we made up, and that's what our egos are, is a perverse vanity, an imposter that we hired at tremendous expense to try to replace the unassailable piece that we never left. Anyway. Should we go on while we still have
a little time? Sure. Okay.
I've been rambling as much as you. Yes, second paragraph.
Second paragraph. Yes. Okay. And so, as we are willing to practice our lessons of forgiveness, we may experience seemingly external symbols as you have. And let's go back and remember the question. The questioner asks, doesn't the Holy Spirit intervene when I get my parking place that I'm asking for, or, you know, something occurs to happen, or somebody says something randomly to me that, you know, I interpret as an angel speaking or whatever. So that's kind of the question. So we may experience seemingly external symbols as you have while we believe we are bodies that seem to remind us of and reinforce our decision to forgive. Just as when we choose to judge and condemn, we may see, wow, is this one long sentence or did I miss the end of something?
No, that's, I think it's all.
Okay. Okay. I thought I missed something. All right. I'm going to start this again. And so as we are willing to practice our lessons of forgiveness, we may experience seemingly external symbols as you have while we believe we are bodies that seem to remind us of and reinforce our decision to forgive. Just as when we choose to judge and condemn, we may see external symbols that reinforce our decision to separate and hate. After all, projection makes perception, and that's a quote from A Course. And you know, if you knew this, it'd be over. If you really knew this, it'd be over.
Yeah.
So as Jesus notes twice in the Course, in chapters 13 and 21, but in either case, it is our mind that has chosen those symbols and chosen the teacher who will interpret their meaning for us. There is nothing special or mysterious about this process, except that we have chosen to keep our own responsibility for our experiences hidden from ourselves. And that's it. When I think the Holy Spirit's doing it, then it's magic. Wow, I'm blessed. But when I think, well, you know, that parking spot's been there since the beginning of time, just as my car has been here since the beginning of time, and nothing special has happened. This is all part of the dream, and this is all part of our attack on God.
I thought I had an old car.
And I thought, I didn't even need a dang car. What am I thinking? you know, all the, and honestly, when you let go of these things, you don't even have the angst that carried you with them. I mean, you actually do become free of the fears that come from even having those things. So you know what they're pointing out here is this cognitive dissonance that we experience here in this world, and it is because our experience is not matching our expectation of our experience, and therefore a parking spot is seen as a grace and a stubbed toe is seen as a curse. You know, because we're thinking that there are different things, that there are levels or differences, and there's not. It's all the same thing. It's us dreaming. That's it. That's all. And you know what? You don't have to deny the toe. You don't have to deny the parking space. You don't have to deny any of the dream. Just recognize that it's not true, right. and wake up. You know, and because when you walk through a dream in an awake state, and if you've ever done, what do they call it?
Lucid dreaming.
Mm-hmm. You know how that is.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a dream dreaming. You know, that's what's so funny is a dream dreaming that they're in a dream dreaming.
We're back to the movie Inception.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're still, you know, the conscious mind is just interpreting the experience. And this is why the ego has such a great hold on us, because the ego is the one who just keeps saying, no, no, no. It's like bait and switch. It's like, seek but do not find. You know, here's love. Here's joy. Here's happiness. Here's delicious food. You know, oh no, here's divorce. Here's, here's sorrow. Here's indigestion. You know, none of it can be, there's not one whole experience in this world. There's not one whole experience in this world. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, to tie into what this paragraph talks about is, you know, the symbols that we make and ascribe meaning to kind of tie into those first workbook lessons. You know, I've given everything I see, all the meaning that it has for me. Well, by default, ego is going to make up stuff to keep us rooted in the dream. Last night, my mother and I went out to a meal to a Chinese restaurant in town here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that happened was the waiter bringing a tray that had a couple of glasses of ice water and some tea managed to spill that on us. I was thinking, well, gee, I could make it something symbolic out of the fact that all I had was a little bit of the tea splashed on my pant leg, and my mom had some of the ice water splashed on her. So, you know, the two different things went different ways. I could make a big story about, you know, the hot and cold, and what does that mean? It's like, well, no, it only means something in a dream. So any more than we can take something that seems to go well or seems to not go well. You know, another thing that crosses my mind sometimes is if I've been eating more than I think I need to eat, sometimes I'll bite the inside of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes like a little reminder. It's like, well, no, I made the whole thing up. I made the body up and I made up the world. So none of this has any meaning other than I can choose to, you know, use those symbols in a fabricated way, but I can also use it in a fabricated way that leads to forgiveness. And I think that's the important thing.
Well, and really, I bit my mouth. That's it. There's no story to it.
Right, right.
You know, I have a mouth. That's a story. I bit it. That's a story. But that's it. There's no story to it. There's no because of this, because there's no cause
right.
to any of this effect. I mean, this we're thinking that, you know, one thing leads to another, and one thing does not lead to another, because again, it's like the here's maybe this makes sense. I like to play games on Facebook, and they have these little casinos on Facebook, and so you can go and play these slot machines. I don't even know why. It's just fun to watch these, you know, things going around. But the fact is, there's nothing going around, okay? What it is one picture of this scene, one picture of this scene, one picture of this scene. Every possible scenario of that slot machine is in a picture. And all that's happening is those pictures are flashing back and forth, flash, 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 flash. Pixels coming out of a screen, that's it. Pictures flashing. At any moment, if you stop that, which happens when, you know, it stops running, it stops at one of the pictures. That's it. I'm not going to change that picture and make that seven go up, you know, a notch and be in line with those other two sevens. That's not going to happen because that's a whole nother picture that is not even possible in this situation. So this is what we're doing. We are in a picture. Everything here is actually static. It's like a cartoon or a movie. You know, I think these things have been given to us as symbols so that we can actually get an understanding. Well, where have they been given to us? we wrote them into the script. We wrote, this is the whole thing. The whole thing is already done. And so, you know, maybe with the Holy Spirit's miracles are these realizations that come about, these thoughts that come up to say, oh, I'm not even moving at all. Just like the cartoon figure is not even moving at all. The animation cell is one thing and it will not change. And so all I'm doing is seeing picture upon picture upon picture upon picture and interpreting it as being a flow of motion. And a flow of cause and effect. And so I can look at the picture from yesterday in my mind and say, well, of course it was going to happen today because I did this yesterday. That is how time is constructed in our minds. The ego has this whole continuum set up. And not because it's trying to be evil, but because that's its job, is to make this illusion seem real.
Right.
And the illusion seems real, the illusion of the whirling reels seems real, but it's not. It's just a picture.
Exactly. We literally blend together a pulsating hologram made from an insane thought system into what seems to be a continuous reality, but it's all made up. In fact, I think I've mentioned this before, but there's a lady named Robin McWane who gave a talk here in Northern California some years ago, and she'd been studying modern physics and came up with this discovery she found about the Planck time constant that suggests that not only are we looking at a stroboscopic pulsing, you know, hologram, but it's incredibly fast. It's basically on the order of 10 to the 44th times per second that the universe winks out of existence and then springs back again.
Yes.
Seemingly almost identical to the previous incarnation of itself. And yet each one of those 10 to the 44th holographic images per second is just a silly dream. That's how complicated and how the lengths that we went to avoid looking at our unconscious guilt to see that there's nothing there. That's how phenomenal and stupendous is that craziness, huh?
And it is beautiful that we're finally explaining to ourselves why we did this or how we did this. And maybe this is just another fool me thing too, because you know, look how many times we've fooled ourselves through. If you look at the history of civilization, which is really just happening right now, which has already happened, is done. But we look at it and we see, oh well, this great teaching came along and it caused, you know, a lot of movement and awakening, and then, you know, it petered out eventually, you know, and you know, became something entirely different, like. You know, I'll say Jesus. Jesus, you know, during his time had a very small audience of people, but you know, maybe hundreds, maybe even thousands, I don't know, of people knew who he was and heard some part of his message and had actual contact with him. And so were able to see, you know, to be, not even to see Jesus. I don't think it's the idea to see Jesus. The idea to be in the presence of one who sees the Christ in you. The idea of being in the presence of one who sees that you're the Christ is extremely powerful. It draws you. You want to feel that feeling. You want to know that you're seen. And so, you know, that's what Jesus did. He went around and he saw people. Basically, he saw what they were. And so that was a very powerful thing, and it caused a big, you know, uproar in that part of the world, I'm sure, for a while, and became like a world religion.
And it became misinterpreted. Even the people farther away in the crowd probably heard something like, "Blessed are the Greeks, for they shall inhibit their girth."
Yes, exactly. Or they maybe heard him saying, "How is Ben doing?" You know?
Right. There you go. Should we read? Should we see if we can finish the rest of the FAQ
okay.
here?
Let us do it.
Mosey along pretty quickly in order to read
okay.
the last few
Well, mosey on.
Okay.
All right.
Shall I read the third paragraph?
Go ahead and read, yeah.
Okay. But this has been great. I think we've covered a lot of good ground here. The Holy Spirit does not intervene in the world because there is no world, only a dream in our mind that seems very real while we remain asleep. Yep. The Holy Spirit does not intervene in our minds either, although the Course in Places describes the Holy Spirit as if he does. Again, a metaphor. This is simply a literary device Jesus uses at times to make it clear that we are not in charge of our own salvation, in the sense that anything we think we can do on our own must, by its very nature, involve our ego. That is, the part of our mind that believes we can be on our own and separate from God. The Holy Spirit represents that part of our mind that knows otherwise. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and into the dream.
See, and that's what I was saying, that whenever I start thinking I have to do something,
mm-hmm.
or I have to know something, or I have to that it makes me nervous, it upsets me, it gives me a headache. It's just I go into a panic, mm-hmm. and it's because I think I have to do something. And you know what they're saying here? No, you don't. Well, that's the whole point. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so by relinquishing our need to be in control, to be in charge, we allow another part of our mind to remind us of the truth about ourselves, opening our mind to gentler symbols and, most importantly, to gentler interpretations of all the symbols we have projected within our minds. Wow. There's a lot in that paragraph, too, huh?
There is. You could write a whole book about this. I mean, really, well, many people have, and who reads those books? but yeah, so very true. The relinquishing our need to be in control.
Yes.
To just let go. And that's what I was saying too about the ego. The ego controls by saying no. The ego controls by saying, "Whoa, wait a minute, I'm not sure, don't do that." You know, that's how the ego controls, is by throwing us into fear about, you know, what we're thinking and doing, so that we continue to look to it for help. And instead of just recognizing that as the Holy Son of God, I don't need to look anywhere for help except within to where the truth really is. and it's gotten so good for me, Bruce, because once I recognize that and I start feeling that feeling of fear, I recognize immediately, oh, I'm trying to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do something.
Yeah, and that's where the anxiety comes in, because we're trying to figure out everything from the standpoint of nothing.
Right. We don't know how. I don't know how to do anything.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea. I mean, I can make it up, and that's where you start thinking, oh, how do I do this? Where do I go? Who do I call? What?
Yeah.
And believe me, it happened to me so much over the last couple of weeks, doing this shift and change from Awakening Together to ACIM Gather, and trying to find a way to get the radio onto the websites, and all these different things was just excuse me. Really scaring me. I was really scared. I'm literally like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to get it done by the time. Instead of just looking and saying, wow, it's already been done, so all I got to do is just wait. No.
I can totally relate to that because I, you know, as you probably well know, I do websites, and sometimes I think, well, how am I going to achieve this? And then, you know, if I trust the process, even on, you know, again, this is now just the very thing this is talking about is making interpretations out of things happening in the dream of, it's no different than the parking space analogy, but, you know, I'll run across a plugin that does what I need and that's already been invented and it looks like it's very popular. So I thought I'll try that one. Sure enough, you know, it does what it says it's going to do, you know, and it's like, wow, that was solved. But I think the more important principle is not that all of our technical challenges in the dream world are going to be fixed, but that sometimes they're not. But the true challenge is always met by the miracle that's presented to us for our acceptance moment to moment to moment. And I think that's what this is addressing here.
Exactly. And that is when I open up for the miracle, I go into acceptance and I stop resisting and I stop saying no and I stop hearing the ego's voice for fear. You know, and when the ego's voice of fear does come up, I say, well, you know, hey, I got it covered. We don't have to worry about this. And really to be in that place where we don't have to worry about this is peaceful. It is a very peaceful place. Yeah. It's a relief. Yeah. And you're probably wondering, Lynn, why didn't you call me if you're having trouble finding a radio player for a Shoutcast radio player for WordPress? You know what? I did think about calling you, and I thought, well, I'm not going to bother Bruce, the guy who probably does know how to do it, because, you know, then I wouldn't be able to scare myself to death over here.
Well, actually, you probably did what I do, which is Google. I mean, Google sort of.
Oh God, yes.
Another metaphor for knowing that there is a solution out there somewhere if you're patient
well,
enough.
I just keep looking for it and YouTube videos. That's what I do. The YouTube and unfortunately, for some reason, programmers make the worst YouTube instruction videos in the world because they expect you to know things and they just jump from one thing to another and you're like, well, how did you get that? Where did that come from?
I know plenty of those, but I also know plenty that are patient too. Lynda.com being one of those resources. That's just a gold mine of that kind of good stuff. Anyway, now we're getting off on a real tangent, but
all right, so
that's a pragmatic.
No,
you're doing web stuff. Yeah.
There is no tangent here.
Exactly.
No tangent is possible. We're just going along doing exactly what we're doing. So, many passages. Is that the next paragraph?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Many passages in A Course in Miracles elaborate on what we have been describing, but let's consider just two of the clearer statements. In The Responsibility for Sight in Chapter 21, we find the following emphatic declaration. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. It is impossible the Son of God be merely driven by events outside of him. Impossible. It is impossible that happenings that come to him were not his choice. His power of decision is the determiner of every situation in which he seems to find himself by chance or accident. And, you know, this is kind of a little trick statement here, because it makes it seem like I'm actually actively wanting this stuff right now. I'm actively wanting, you know, my power to go out. I'm actively wanting, you know, to trip on a banana peel or whatever. No, I did this already. Long ago. There's no chance that there's going to be an accident. There's no chance that I'm going to change the script. There's no chance that anything I can say or do is going to make anything happen any differently than it happened long ago, because it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Not a note in heaven's song was missed. Over. So, you know, if just think about this, and it's a horrifying thought, what if it were possible? What if it were?
You're trying to scare us, Lynn. Oh no!
Trying to scare you now. What if it were actually possible for us to continue to miscreate after we had that tiny mad idea? What if it were possible for us to just continue to miscreate forever and ever?
Positively dreadful, Lynn. Don't go there. Don't go there, please.
That's horrifying to think about that. We're not capable of continuing to miscreate. All the miscreation is done over. And all we're doing is watching and looking at it and going, oh my God, can I believe I did that? You know, or, oh my God, this is happening to me. Either way you look at it, one way you're going to be terrified and the other way you're going to be like, whoa. Anyway, so he says, his power of decision is the determiner of every situation in which he seems to find himself. Because I decided to have a tiny mad idea by chance or accident. Suffer and you decided sin was your goal. Be happy and you gave the power of decision to him who must decide for God for you. And of course he's talking about the Holy Spirit here, or our own true self. So if I choose to suffer, I say, yep, I'm a victim of this mistake. Or I can look at it and say, wow, what a wacky thing.
Yeah. And I think, again, over and over, you know, it sounds like a broken record mantra, but I think it's so important, to, as Ken Wapnick says, to not get too far from the metaphysics of the Course, which states that, in so many ways, that the Course is addressed solely and only to the mind, and specifically the decision-making faculty of the mind, which that part of us, which is really the reality of us, which is outside of space and time, that believed it was possible to choose a separate, seemingly individual existence. And but we're so used to identifying with that little s self individuality that we've forgotten that there's this part in our mind, or again, the reality of our mind, and which the ego is really a part, but we have it backwards so much, that it's really that faculty. It's the decision-making faculty that chose the whole dream, and it chose the whole package deal. It got the e-ticket ride into the hologram and got the whole enchilada experience. So we didn't, as individuals, choose all the little seemingly separate things that happened to us. But as a decision-making identity, we decided for the ego, and that was the only decision that we need to undo. And that's really what A Course in Miracles is bringing us inexorably and beautifully and patiently. but at the same time, you know, hurry up, because why suffer needlessly?
Right. Yeah.
To not suffer from the decision that was made outside of the whole realm of space and time. And it's not something that it's like, oh, you know, you get up first thing in the morning saying, oh, I think I'll have, you know, these 17,000 things happen to me today. No, it's not at that level. It's at the level of the decision-making faculty of the mind, that we think we made up this massive, massive dream. Shall I read the next one?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And later in the text, in the dreamer of the dream, Jesus notes, you are the dreamer of the world of dreams. No other cause it has, nor ever will. So fearful is the dream, so seeming real, he, the Son of God, could not waken to reality without the sweat of terror and a scream of mortal fear, the counter-rotating knives of the architect's sketch, unless a gentler dream preceded his awakening. And that's the important one, is that the gentler dream is the dream of forgiveness, and allowed his calmer mind to welcome, not to fear, the voice that calls with love to waken him. Again, the voice being the metaphor of that golden thread, the awareness we took with us into the dream. Accept the dream he gave instead of yours. It is not difficult to change a dream when once the dreamer has been recognized. Rest in the Holy Spirit and allow his gentle dreams to take the place of those you dreamed in terror and in fear of death. And that's from chapter 27 and section 7, paragraph 13 and 14.
The next paragraph, I'm just going to talk to this because, okay. This paragraph is obviously, he's talking about things that, you know, we just already said the Holy Spirit's not here doing things. So it says rest in the Holy Spirit and allow his gentle dreams to take the place of those you dreamed in terror. Actually, this is what I was referring to, and it is kind of specifically earlier in the book, I think maybe chapter 2 or chapter 3, and I have to go really look for that, where he does say that at the instant when we made the tiny mad idea, the Holy Spirit just went in and put miracles behind everything.
Yes.
So it's not, so the Holy Spirit's dream is the miracle. It's It's when we're here and we don't see the evil intent. We don't see the slaughterhouse. We really see that it is an illusion, and that in truth, everyone's playing a part. And in the end, you know, we all get up on the big stage in front of our parents and everybody else in the audience, and we're taking a bow. Look, I did my part. Look, you know, it reminds me of that. There's a, oh gosh, I can't even remember the name of the group. They're Canadian. I'll think of it later. Anyway, it's a video, and it's all about all these different things that things that happen that upset people. And then at the end, all the people in the video are getting up and taking a bow on the stage. So you see that they were just playing a part. Mm-hmm. It's really very symbolic. So this next paragraph then says, note that while this passage makes it sound as if the Holy Spirit is the author of the gentler dream, as already discussed, this is merely a way to remind us we must not decide on our own what the content of our dream should be, because we can't change it. For we will look for symbols that answer our needs from the perspective of the ego, thus reinforcing our belief in the reality of the separation. Well, gee, guess what? The ego put that there, and I interpreted it as being grace from the Holy Spirit, when in actuality, all it's doing is reinforcing my connection to the dream. So, joined with the Holy Spirit, that is the part of your mind that knows the separation is not real, we will see the world in a completely different light, not colored by the filter of our own personal needs. Mm-hmm. And So that's how we interpret from our the filter of our own personal needs, being that, you know, if I needed a parking spot and there was one, oh, I got it. You know, this was for me. If I, you know, didn't need to lose my wallet and I did, then I've been attacked. So every single one of it. No matter how we interpret it, if we don't interpret it as grace or as a gift or as, you know, what could you not accept if you knew it all things or gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good, even that sounds like, you know, God planned it for us. But in reality, you know, the plan was for us to look at it and say, oh, you know, it's a dream. Right. That's the plan for all of it. Is to look at it and recognize it as a dream, but that's the Holy Spirit's plan, and the ego's plan, obviously, is to, you know, keep convincing us that it's real. So it's real simple. You know, what do you want to believe? Mm-hmm. Who do you want to listen to?
Yeah, there's another quote that to me is very challenging, but I think very potent one is, you know, if something to the effect of, if you knew that, you know, whatever you've chosen, you know, as ego, was an attack on God, would you want it? You know, and that's, I think, a reminder that whether things seem to be going well or not well, whether we're a victimizer or a victim, whether, you know, we interpret things as positive or negative in the world of form and space and time, anything that we use as a substitute for, I was going to say the ancient master's word, which is a Masonic symbol, but that's kind of symbolic too, is of, you know, the truth that we took with us into the dream that we never left, the reminder that, you know, we couldn't possibly have damaged perfect oneness, that awareness is just gently waiting for us to let go of all of our attacks on God, which really, in this world, again, take the form of calls for love. And that's, I think, the perspective that helps us return to that golden thread that leads us out of the cave, where we see, you know, the things that seem just crazy, nutso, and how can anyone think that way? Well, so if we can remember, like, every seeming horrific thing that we or anyone else does, that we, you know, are tempted to feel bad about, it's like, that's a call for love. And that's yes. Where our forgiveness is merited and justified, is that pardon is always justified in the justification for forgiveness comes in. You know, it's always justified because the world is a dream. The world we made up is a dream. The real world, which we don't really have much cognizance of, doesn't need any forgiveness because there are no differences in that real world.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And so there's no perception also, mm-hmm. because the perception is only possible if you see differences. It is a dualistic thing. Perception has to have a sender and a receiver. So in order to have it, yeah. You're already in La La Land. I don't want to belabor things because we have like 2 minutes before Barb and Devin come on. But this illusion of suffering that appears that, you know, if I'm not suffering enough because of all the crap in my life, I can certainly look out into the world and see vast multitudes of suffering everywhere I look. In fact, that's really all I see. Even the happiest people appear to be suffering because, you know, that's the way the world is set up. And so the ability to see without seeing it as suffering, without seeing, when I look at it, and this is the whole purpose of the justification of forgiveness, I look at it and recognize that actually there's not even individuals out there who are living these lives in suffering. This is, again, all a script of the ego. And so, you know, these things that I'm looking at that I'm perceiving as suffering, I can react in the world by giving the hungry guy a sandwich. But the reality of it is, I got to recognize that there's no guy. He's not hungry. It's not possible. Hunger is impossible in reality. So I'm looking at something that cannot be. It's absolutely impossible. And by that, then I can ask to be shown a different way. Show me something. Show me what's really here. But first I have to recognize that what I'm seeing is not really here. And, you know, or else I won't look for another meaning or another reason. And so, you know, it's a process.
And then you may or may not decide to buy the guy a sandwich, but it will be from a place of kindness, and the kindness that is born from the awareness that there is no difference, and mm-hmm. that seemingly other person is you. There really is no difference, and you know, you would be treating to sound like a broken record again, you know, that with the golden rule, you know, each other as ourself, because that's all there is that oneself, that one being.
Yeah, and that's when you recognize this. I'm just going to real quick read this last paragraph.
Okay.
And then we'll turn the mic over to Barb and Devin. Again, to understand fully what Jesus is saying in these passages, it is paramount that we know that he is addressing the mind, the selves we believe we are, bodies with special unique personalities, are the dream figures, the effects that, and have no power to dictate anything about what our experience shall be. They only carry out the direction the mind gives. Once we begin to accept that, the mystery of our lives and our experiences will begin to fade. And I can tell you that's happened for me. So, and I know it's happening for you too. So that's all cool.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls, and talk to you again next Saturday at the House of the Rising Sun. Bye.